Tenney Nathanson.
I didn't do anything. I'm delighted to welcome Leslie Scalapino back to Tucson. It's been a few years now since she's read here. She's a wonderful writer. Her work is widely admired. Poets of very different stripes follow it avidly. Her titles offer at least a hint of her sensibility. These include, among others, Instead of an Animal, Considering How Exaggerated Music Is, That They Were at the Beach, and my own favorite as a title, This Eating and Walking Around at the Same Time is Associated All Right. The more recent, Crowd and Not Evening or Light, Way, The Return of Painting, The Pearl and Orion, which is a trilogy, and Defoe, and the plays Goya's L.A., this one has a picture of a samurai on the cover, Stone Marmalade, co-authored with Kevin Killian, and The Weatherman Turns Himself In. You can hear it tomorrow night at 7 p.m. at Dinnerware. If recollection isn't betraying me, Leslie has been called a sort of anthropologist without portfolio. Anyway, if she hasn't already been, she has now. Her object of study is her own tribe, the tribe which believed it wasn't one, and one of her subjects is that eclipse of relation which Baudrillard, maybe a little too avid to put the next nail in the coffin, calls the death of the social. Leslie's work, I think, asks us to consider both the force and the self-defeating and maybe self-serving limitation of such a description. Apparently laconic, her work is deeply engaged, and it registers the writer's own urgent entanglement in the world she scans. That scanning is capacious and complex. The present terrain it reveals includes, I think, to go for just a short list, digitalization, database operations, and modular production, post-Fordist outsourcing, globalization, displacement, and misery, modern ennui and alienation, as named, say, by Baudelaire, and oddly levered by Walter Benjamin into the hope of apocalyptic transfiguration, and perhaps Zen Buddhist non-attachment, which isn't the same as detachment. In Leslie's work, these morph into one another in surprising ways, all duly registered as part of the tale of the tribe. The poet Charles Bernstein, in his Artifice of Absorption, offers a fine take on Leslie's work, which I'm going to read here. The repetitions in the poetry of Leslie Scalapino create a kind of disabsorptive charm. The slight accented shifts in similar statements operate as gradually shifting scans of the field of perception, where this perceptual reiteration gradually, processually discloses more and more, so that the outer shell of any momentarily fixed perception gives way to a depthful field of actuality. Scalapino correlates shifts in syntactic patterns with shifts in attentional focus. Using a language sometimes bordering on sociological observation, the details that Scalapino reveals have the intensity of the obviously factual, while continually showing themselves within the echo chamber that is each work to be hidden truths, clues to how a life is understood through the unfolding of specific details, obscured or repressed, brought to light by the probing of memory, perception, and invention. Yet finally, it is the rhythm created by permuting the attentional beams, the chordal patterns created by her serial scannings that create the musical coherence that takes the work beyond any distancing or dislocating devices that serve to build it. The refusal to be absorbed in any single focus on a situation gives way to a multifocused absorption that eerily shifts as an ambiguous figure from anxious to erotic to diffident to hypnotic. And here are a couple of more quick scans, indirect takes this time, possible asymptotes. From here on in the spirit of Benjamin, whom Leslie herself quotes in the trilogy, nothing but quotation. Benjamin himself from the Theses on History. A clay painting named Angelus Novus shows an angel looking as though he is about to move away from something he is fixedly contemplating. His eyes are staring, his mouth is open, his wings are spread. This is how one pictures the angel of history. His face is turned toward the past. Where we perceive a chain of events, he sees one single catastrophe, which keeps piling wreckage upon wreckage and hurls it in front of his feet. The angel would like to stay, awaken the dead, and make whole what has been smashed. But a storm is blowing from paradise. It has got caught in his wings with such violence that the angel can no longer close them. This storm irresistibly propels him into the future, to which his back is turned, while the pile of debris before him grows skyward. This storm is what we call progress. and this the essay's end. The soothsayers who found out from time what it had in store certainly did not experience time as either homogeneous or empty. Anyone who keeps this in mind will perhaps get an idea of how past times were experienced in remembrance, namely, in just the same way. We know that the Jews were prohibited from investigating the future. The Torah and the prayers instruct them in remembrance, however. This stripped the future of its magic, to which all those succumb who turn to the soothsayers for enlightenment. This does not imply, however, that for the Jews the future turned into homogeneous, empty time, for every second of time was the straight gate through which the Messiah might enter. And finally this, from the Diamond Sutra. All composite things are like a dream, a phantasm, a bubble, and a shadow, or like a dewdrop and a flash of lightning. They are thus to be regarded. Leslie Scalapino.
Thank you very much, Kenny.